Shema is the name given to the declaration of faith that is at the heart of morning and evening prayer in the Jewish synagogue. So you might be surprised that in one synagogue in Eastern Europe, the behavior that accompanied the reciting of the Shema caused some consternation. As the Shema prayer was said, half the congregation stood up and half remained seated. And the half that remained seated started yelling at those standing to sit down. And the one standing yelled at the one sitting to stand up. The synagogue rabbi, learned as he was at a loss as to what to do. His congregation suggested that he consult one of the founders of the synagogue, who no longer attended because he was elderly and lived in a residential home. Perhaps he might be able to shed some light on this sorry state of affairs. So the rabbi and a representative from each faction of the congregation, the sitters and the standers, visited and inquired of the old man. The one whose followers stood during Shema said to the old man, "Is the tradition to stand during this prayer?" The old man answered, "No, that is not the tradition." The one whose followers sat asked, "Is it the tradition to sit during Shema?" The old man answered, "No, that is not the tradition." Then the rabbi said to the old man, "But the congregation fight all the time, yelling at each other about whether they should sit or stand." The old man interrupted, "Yes, that is the tradition." Tev, the dairyman and narrator in the musical The Fiddler on the Roof, put it like this: without our traditions, our lives would be as shaky as the fiddler on the roof. That's how the Pharisees saw it, those Pharisees and scribes who approached Jesus in the episode recorded in this morning's gospel. They are establishment figures, perhaps sent by the religious authorities in Jerusalem to observe, investigate, and to make a report on this charismatic and wildly popular teacher who is pulling the crowds. Possibly, just possibly, they have come with closed minds. For when they spy some of Jesus' disciples eating bread without washing their hands, they denounce this breach with tradition. For that is what it is, tradition, and not a requirement of the Hebrew Scriptures. For the Pharisee, eating the wrong food, associating with the wrong people, being with the wrong people at the wrong time could jeopardize his state of ritual purity. And this had serious implications for offering sacrifice in the temple. But it wasn't only about temple sacrifice. For the uber religious, it was about integrating temple rules into everyday life. It is not that Jesus completely rejects all this. He has doubtless to some extent been brought up with it. But Jesus reframes it and reorders its priorities. "What about your hearts?" he says. "You have become blinded by your own hypocrisy. preoccupied with the trivia of pots and pans and food and ignorant of what really counts, the purity of your heart. Cutting to the quick, Jesus cites a verse from Isaiah. "This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines." In other words, the legalists mistake lip service for heart service and confuse human conventions with God's commandments, so evading, perverting, and nullifying the commandments of God. There can be no more crushing critique of a religion than for its worship to be judged as show and its teaching as human invention. Once a religion epitomized by its worship has become more absorbed by tradition than the need to nurture and inform a person's relationship with God, then it has lost its heart. No wonder Jesus was crucified. So what about this, our Eucharist, our act of worship? Is it lip service or heart service? Dom Gregory Dix, the Anglican Benedictine monk and liturgical scholar, argued that what was common to the Mass, the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper, the Holy Communion, whatever form or name it takes, is not a set of words, but an underlying Eucharistic structure. What our Lord instituted was not a service, something said, but an action, something done. Or rather, the continuance of a traditional Jewish action, but with a new meaning, to which he attached a consequence. The new meaning was that henceforth this action was to be done for the amanis of me, the remembrance of me. All Eucharistic worship is of necessity and intention a corporate action, not merely a distant memory in the corporate psyche of the church, but a real and functional remembrance that has a dynamic and living quality. Not there and then, but here and now. Dom Gregory identified four actions in what we are recalling and representing this morning as we proclaim the radical reign of God. One, bread and wine are taken. Two, bread and wine are blessed. Three, bread is broken. Four, bread and wine are shared. This fourfold action is the blueprint of our Christian life. First, the offertory, the taking of bread and wine, is symbolic of that profound offering of each one of us. If we are to know God and serve God, it begins with offering ourselves. Second, having offered ourselves and being received by God, we are blessed just as the bread and wine are blessed. An act of blessing can have a variety of intentions, but here, as you and I are blessed, we are being made holy, set aside for God's work. But that can come at a cost. For third, having given ourselves and radically committed ourselves to a life of holiness, to follow wherever God leads, we find ourselves confronted by the brokenness of the world and our neighbour. We cannot distance ourselves from the pain and humiliation of brokenness. Instead, we willingly enter into it in order to challenge, to heal, and to raise up those who have been broken. And fourth, we share. We share equally, without favour or privilege or prejudice, proclaiming God's reign among the poorest, the outcast, and the oppressed of society. We share our voice, our gifts, and our wealth, ensuring that we, the church, as a foretaste of God's reign, are present among migrants and refugees, among the sick and the dying, among the persecuted and the betrayed, among the untouchables and seemingly irredeemable. This morning, let each one of us ponder what it might mean to allow our lives to be Eucharistically ordered, offered, blessed, broken, and shared. Or are we content to be a church which honours God with our lips while our hearts are far from Him? Our worship mere vanity, and our teaching self-serving.